time. It's always vanishing. The commute, the errands, the work functions, the meetings, selling your car. Unless you sell your car with Carvana. Get a real offer in minutes. Get it picked up from your door. Get paid on the spot. So fast, you'll wonder what the catch is. There isn't one. We just respect you and your time. Oh, you're still here? Move along now. Enjoy your day. Sell your car today. Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Today on the show, we will talk about some news in the world of Houston restaurants, as well as our meals at a couple of Houston restaurants you may want to try. To do that, I am joined by my co-host this week. He is a Houston hospitality veteran and a co-founder of the Houston Barbecue Festival. Michael Fulmer, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Always great to be here. And it's been an exciting week in the world of barbecue.
It has been an exciting week in the world of barbecue, which leads us to the news of the week. Topic number one, Texas Monthly has released its latest top 50 barbecue joint selections. I had Ernest Cervantes, Leonard Botello, and Robert Jacob Lerma on to talk about that a little bit last week. Well, a lot of it last week, but we haven't really talked about the list from kind of a readership perspective or like a layperson's perspective. Obviously, Ernest and Leonard are pitmasters who own restaurants that were in the list. You and I have a slightly different perspective on things. So, I mean, let me just ask you, let's kind of start with the top three. I mean, we have Burnt Bean Company and Seguin is number one, Leroy and Lewis and Austin is number two, and Goldie's is number three. You know, when I made some predictions about how I thought the list would shake out, I described these as the three locks. Like, this was the consensus that these would be the top three in some order, and indeed they were. So do you have a take on the top three barbecue joints in Texas right now?
I do have a take. First off, I got to give props because we talked about this beforehand, and I believe I owe you a wager that you correctly predicted that Franklin and Snow's would drop out.
Well, no, we're going to talk about that. No, I'm going to taunt you about that in a minute. But start at the top for me.
You have this all planned. Very good. All right, let's talk about the top three. Yeah, Burnt Bean. You know, and I posted this in my Instagram. Is that I feel like anyone who's been there will immediately and understand. You know that they really do deserve to be in the number one spot. It's something that becomes immediately evident to you in not just his commitment and the space and the feeling of it, but the quality of the food, the breadth, the depth. It's just fantastic. And all of my discussions, not only with you, but with many of my other friends in the barbecue world, you know, there was a real consensus that Burnt Bean was going to be number one. And if not, it certainly deserved to be.
No, I think that's correct. And I think, you know, kind of looking at the list overall and something I'm going to ask Daniel Vaughn about when he's on in a couple of days is how much does storytelling play a role in the rankings? How much does expanding the definition of what it means to serve Texas barbecue play in this? Because obviously what Ernest is doing, especially in that Sunday morning breakfast service, is so personal and just so beyond, you know, a Malaya's taco or, Huevos Rancheros or, you know, even the Moroccan lamb ribs. I mean, those aren't, you know, barbecue as I understand it, right? That never would have been served at the Luther's of my 80s childhood, but it's coming off a pit and it's coming from a barbecue perspective. And so, you know, we're seeing the new face of Texas barbecue, this more expansive definition of what it means to make barbecue in Texas in 2025.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, you look at Leroy and Lewis, which kind of famously, when they set themselves out as a trailer, brisket was not on the menu every day. I mean, there is no lack of brisket and quality brisket all over Austin and all over Texas. And they said, you know what, we're going to do beef cheeks as our premier or, you know, the top protein. And we'll do brisket, on certain days, but it's not going to be up there. you know, every day. And brisket is incredibly expensive. It's a very tight, you know, margin for barbecue places. And that was obviously a very conscious decision. And Evan Leroy, you know, this is a guy who really has mastered many proteins and has, it continues to evolve. And it was a bold move, but it, you know, it was clearly the right move. And
well, and of course, when they opened their brick and mortar location last year, brisket is on the menu every day because people have certain expectations, right? Customers have expectations for what they want in a barbecue joint. And they had to give in.
100%. But, you know, now they have much more facilities to do that in. I've been several times to the brick and mortar. Fantastic. The whole hog, the hanger steak. It's all just great. Of the top 10, I think I've been to 8 of them. And we've talked about this before also, like what separates the top 10, the top 15, even it's such a narrow margin. And you raise the issue of like, well, is there a story that's being told here? Is there something personal? Are there expanded proteins? You know, these are all coming into play. And there's certain intangibles that, yes, the barbecue, people like Daniel Vaughn, there's 26 people who contribute to this, you know, and many of them are very experienced and, you know, and they have very set guidelines, but there are intangibles. You know, there's something ephemeral about the experience about going to some places. And when you're like, when you're in Burnt Bean or when you have that tray from Goldie's or you go to Redbird, you know, it's like you feel it, you know, it's, there's some parts of it that are even hard to articulate that this isn't just great food. This isn't just a well-executed protein that like hits all the marks. It's this big bear hug, this big warmth, you know, and it's not just nostalgia. It's like, you know, you're embracing something that's very Texan, but also very personal. And these guys all just like, this is a bullseye, you know, from all of them. And it's exciting. And not only is exciting, like where we are right now, but where we'll be again in 4 years, you know, like who are the guys coming up and who are the people that haven't even appeared yet? You know, it is really a great time to be a barbecue lover or someone who's coming into the world and trying barbecue because it's never been better. And it's just, it continues to evolve in a really positive, personal way that, you know, I'm all in on.
The next thing I just want to discuss briefly, a lot of turnover in the Houston barbecue joints that were picked for the top 50, right? Houston kind of, you know, the Houston area, which now extends, you know, all the way to Montgomery with Jennings and Barre, kind of holds steady at 7 restaurants, but there's a lot of turnover, right? The only ones that returned were Truth, which held its ground and stayed in the top 10, Corkscrew in Spring, and Pinkerton's, which in 2021, they recognized the San Antonio restaurant. This time they're back to Houston. But then, you know, we see that turnover, right? Brett's Barbecue in Katy, Tejas Barbecue in Tomball, Killen's Barbecue in Pearland, Blood Brothers and Fijis Barbecue all fall out of the top 10 into the honorable mentions. And so now you have Barre, Rosemeyer, Brisket & Rice, some of these newer places establishing their presence. You know, no one probably pays more attention to the Houston barbecue scene than you do. Does that feel right to you that these new places are kind of standing up and asserting their presence and worthy of this recognition?
I think it's right that they're acknowledged and that they've been put into this top 50 space because I think they're all worthy of it. You know, what's happening up at Rosemeyer out of a trailer is nothing short of just wonderful. I mean, Spring has Corkscrew and they, you know, my feelings about Corkscrew are well documented. I just think they're fantastic. I think it's worth noting that, you know, when Texas Monthly does this, you know, they're going sometimes one time. Now, the ones that are making the top 10 have repeat visits, and some of these have a few repeat visits, but you know, sometimes this, if you just have a day that's just slightly off, this may lead to you coming off the list or coming from top 50 to honorable mention or dropping off completely. For people like you and me and most of the people who are listening who patronize these places, and we say, you know, it becomes a head scratcher, like, well, Blood Brothers, man, they're fantastic. And Fijis is like, they're just killing it. Well, you know what? They are killing it and they're fantastic. But this is what happens sometimes with, you know, a list that gets put this way. You know, you've said it and I've said it, you know, that debating barbecue is your Texas birthright once you've been here at least a couple of months. And, you know, that's what we're doing now. And I think the state of Houston barbecue has never been better. And I think there's a lot of room for growth. We've talked about this before, too. There's areas that are definitely underserved. Are there some places that may have slipped a little? You know, maybe. Are there places that will play more to their core audience? This is what they realize, like, this is what their people want. You know, maybe the people want the ribs done a little bit more, whatever. In the end, these are businesses that are looking to survive and to thrive, and that's who they have to pay attention to the most. Now, does being right, on the top?
No. I want to emphasize that point just for a second, because I think what happens is if you just stand still, right? If you deliver a consistent product that your customers like day in and day out, you will slip on this list because there are so many new places that are doing more or a little more innovative or are just bringing that fresh perspective. And so, you know, what you were doing 4 years ago or even 8 years ago that got you into the top 50, if you're not doing even more than you were doing before, like that's it's going to be really difficult to maintain your position, I think.
I think that's fair. And sometimes that, you know, manifests itself in expanding proteins and menus. And sometimes it just means, you know what, you just got a little bit better on how you execute. And that's how good the world is that we live in, you know, and the Aaron Franklin revolution and what that's done. And, you know, it's all better for all of us. Is it hard now on these operators and these pitmasters and restaurant owners? It is to be sure. But I know many of them, and I know them, many of them are equal to the task. So I think that's a really fair statement.
All right. And then the last thing I want to just discuss is as you mentioned, you and I made a little friendly wager before the list came out a few weeks ago. I said Franklin Barbecue would not be in the top 10. You said that it would be. You owe me $20. Franklin Barbecue, not in the top 10. Snow's Barbecue in Lexington, not in the top 10. This is the first time ever for either one of those restaurants that since they've been open not to be ranked at the top of however many, you know, if it was 4 1 year or 10 1 year or whatever, this is the first time for both of those restaurants to be out of the top ranking. And so, you know, what do you make of that? You know, these are arguably the two most famous Texas barbecue joints in the world. And I don't think being in or out of the top 10, like being in the second 40, the alphabetized part of the top 50, is going to hurt their business or shorten their lines in any way. But it does say something about the barbecue world that these two very celebrated, very famous restaurants are no longer among the 10 best in Texas, according to Texas Monthly.
I would agree with that. I mean, to me, going to Snow's, you know, it's an experience. You know, you're sitting among the pits. You know, Lerma really articulated it nicely in your podcast last week. And for those of you who haven't heard that, I really invite you to go back and listen to it, because he really kind of hit the nail on the head. It's the kind of place where almost you, like, the food is almost an afterthought. And it's, you know, Miss Tootsie famously, like, they don't use digital thermometers. She's doing it by touch. This is a woman who, you know, I'm going to use that word I loathe so much, but she really is an icon. And the experience of being there, particularly if you're there in the later fall, this is one of my favorite experiences when it's a little chilly out and you're literally sitting amongst the pits with this tray of incredible barbecue and the vibe of everyone who's there. Anyone who looks at something like that and says, oh, I'm not going to stand in line. I'm not going to wait there. I'm not going to get up that early. And you know what? But that's part of the experience. And though that's not for everybody, it's an incredible thing. The people you meet, and I'll be honest with you, the friends you make, and maybe it's just for a day, but you know what? I've got a whole bookload of friends who I've just met standing in line, and that will just keep me coming back. And as far as Franklin goes, I don't do the lines there anymore because it is really early. You know, I'll go there later in the afternoon and get what I can, or I'll pre-order a large tray, but the quality hasn't slipped at all. It's still incredible. And, you know, Aaron's been on the record saying, hey, I'm not going to do another one. He's doing just fine. He's doing just fine. And but it does say something to the world of barbecue and what Texas Monthly and really how the rest of us are looking at it now.
Well, and I just think about, you know, like I went to Goldie's and I haven't really talked about it very much on the show, but I was blown away. And I knew that it was ranked number one in Texas Monthly, and I knew what I've seen all the YouTube videos of Joshua Weissman and everybody else that's ever been there and eaten a meal there, and even knowing that, even being familiar with its reputation, just the breadth of what they're doing and the way that they work in some Thai flavors and some southern style sides and other things that they do and just. You know, like they make pulled pork, but they cut the pork butt into pork steaks and smoke them that way so that there's more surface area, so that there's more crispy bits when they pull the pork, so that you get that really nice balance of juicy inner meat and crispy exterior bites. And it's there's 100 little details in their barbecue. And I know that the same thing happens at places like Truth and Leroy and Lewis and Burnt Bean Company, obviously, but just to hear the amount of thought that goes into that, all the dishes at that restaurant, and then to taste how incredible everything was. That was, I've been doing some barbecue eating kind of in preparation for the list to come out. And I was just blown away by that. And so in that world, right, it makes sense to me that like they're number three and Snow's and Franklin are second 40. Cause it's just, They're not quite playing the same game anymore.
Yeah, and without getting too far off the path here, and let's we can wrap this up soon. But you look at this top 10 and you realize many of these are almost interchangeable. Like to me, Truth could have been number one. I know how hard Leonard and that whole team works and their commitment to quality. It's incredible, and their longevity on being on the list is well noted. It's also worth talking about that because there was a lot of buzz about Redbird, and I had meals there with Chris Reed, with Daniel Vaughn, with other people. And every time we went there, it was just like, it's one of those things like, how do you talk about it on a podcast where your jaw just kind of drops and your head turns and you're like, oh my God, this is fantastic. And the more you delve into it and talk to their whole team, you realize like how committed they are and how hard they're working, and just it's all resulting in just an incredible, not just experience of barbecue and food, but in dining there too.
Well, let's move on. I want to do top number two, because we've got a couple of restaurants I want to discuss. I don't want this to run too long. But let's do topic number two. Cecil's Pub, the beloved Montrose Dive, has a new home. It closed about 6 months ago. They have claimed the former Elrose space for a new location that just opened last weekend. Michael, I know you're not a drinker, but you've lived in Montrose for a long time. Do you have thoughts on Cecil's? Have you been to Cecil's in your wanderings through the neighborhood?
I've been to Cecil's many times, and I've gone there with friends, and it was an institution. It was part of the Montrose and Houston area, just like Lola's, and that great expansive patio where, even in Houston, and I've been on the record about what I think about patios in Houston for like 5 months out of the year, but Cecil's was one of those places you'd stand out there, you have your drinks, those who smoke or vape or do their thing. And it was just such a great vibe, and I was sad to see it go, even though I hadn't been there in years. It was like, I felt like it was part of Montrose. It was part of Houston. And so I couldn't be happier that they're finding a new home. The patio will be smaller. The bar will be smaller, taking over that spot at Elro. And who knows about, that whole lot across the street will be great for parking. So it will reinvent itself. And, I'm happy, and I hope they're able to endure.
No, I agree with all that. I think Cecil's is kind of one of those bars, like certainly for me in my 20s, as you're kind of learning to be a bar goer and what it means to be a good patron of a bar, Cecil's was kind of an important step in that process for me. And so, we weren't drinking cocktails, right? We were drinking, a Jack and Coke or a vodka soda, or mostly just, bottles of beer, maybe a shot or two if we were celebrating something, playing pool, putting money in the jukebox. Like you said, hanging out on that patio, showing up for, starting at PJ's for steak night and then going to Cecil's next door, just kind of dependent on the vibe of the night. And then, inevitably, like back in the day, you know, drinking too much and then stumbling across West Grey to Wunsiedemeel for a late night gyro or breakfast before
Been there,
you
done that.
so you could sober up a little bit before you went home. This is, you know, pre-Uber. That's how long ago that was. But you know, Cecil's was a formative bar for me. It was a place that friends of mine got together on a weekly basis for a number of years. And so to have it back in any form, you know, even though it's not going to be quite the same, they don't really have room for pool tables, which I think is part of the Cecil's experience. And they're going to have a kitchen, and so,
Definitely.
you know, they're going to work out a food program, I guess. But just to have it back in any form, right? That you know, a casual, affordable neighborhood spot where people can come as they are. And you know, what I liked about Cecil's is you just never knew who you were going to run into. You know, you could go with one group of friends and see other friends. You know, I went to a concert one night at Warehouse Live or the Engine Room or wherever it was. And then we went to Cecil's afterwards because that's what we did. And the opening act from the concert that night was hanging out of the bar. And it's just that kind of place. And so I have very fond memories of Cecil's, even if I haven't been a patron in recent years. And I'm so glad that it's back.
Yeah, I think you make a really good point. Is that this is something affordable? Come as you are. This isn't about craft cocktails. It was something affordable, and almost a rite of passage. And it was part of the identity of the Montrose area. And even if I'm not going there much anymore, I wanted it to be there for other people because it's just a great experience. In how you sum that up, but like I ran into the same thing. I ran into band members from shows I saw there. I met people, new people, old friends. It's a great vibe. And I hope it endures.
Yeah, it was, I think it was Remy Zero. So maybe producer Michael will cut in a couple of seconds of Save Me as we wrap up the news of the week. We will be right back with our restaurants of the week. Stick around. Michael, for our restaurants of the week, I want to talk to you about a couple of places. Let's start with Silk Road. This is the dim sum restaurant that is on West Park. It's located in a courtyard by Marriott, which is a very unusual place for a Chinese restaurant to be, or any restaurant at all, really. But this is a place that's gotten a lot of buzz, right? Bao Wang wrote a review of it for the Chronicle. Allison Cook visited for her newsletter. And it just seems to be one of those places that people are talking about. So let me just ask you, what did you think of our visit to Silk Road?
Once again, surprised at the location myself. Having dim sum inside the loop is a great thing because, a lot of people will travel to Asia Town, but there's a lot of people now in the greater inner loop area who like, you know what? They want something here. And there's Taste of Mulan. There's a few experiences, but this is a real commitment. And I was surprised him going for lunch that, I mean, it was about during a middle weekday, and I'd say it was about 85% full, and the place was buzzing. We had some really, really good dishes. I think the one that stood out, because we can say that with all veracity, because we ordered it twice, the Chung Fun, which is a rice noodle roll, and inside of it had this crispy shrimp, and it came with just a little savory soy sauce that we poured over it that doesn't, you pour it over and it just leaves a light sheen over it. And so there's these layers of flavor, and then you get this crunch, and it's just so satisfying, so much so that we ordered it again. Another thing, which is, a strong determinant of that, is how are their soup dumplings? There's Zhongling Bao, the XLB, and it had a delicate wrapper. They were served warm. They came out just right inside the steamer. Were they the best I've ever had? No, but were they, like, I think better than serviceable? I think they definitely would. Would I order them again? 100%. I think the one dish that really missed was the pork bao that we had. I guess it's the chow sway. That's a sort of light and fluffy, and then it has the barbecue pork on the inside, and it just It fell apart. It didn't feel like it was even cooked all the way through. It was bland. And we didn't even come close to finishing it. Now, that being said, I said most of the rest of the dishes we had were pretty strong.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would agree with all that. I think, you know, we also had, you know, for me, the staples of any dim sum meal are, you know, the haigao, the shrimp dumplings, and the shumai, the kind of the ground pork and shrimp dumplings. And, you know, the first time I went to Silk Road, I thought the shumai had kind of a strange texture for the filling that wasn't entirely pleasant. And then on our visit, I thought that they'd gotten that dialed in. So, you know, I like to see them improving. You know, it's interesting. You mentioned those steamed barbecue pork buns, and I agree with you. That was not a dish that really landed for me. But they are very proud of their baked barbecue pork buns that have that kind of crispy dough exterior and a little bit of sweetness. I think there's like some pineapple or something in it. That's a more successful dish, in my opinion, more typical of kind of what they're going for. You know, the other thing I think that really kind of sets Silk Road apart is that they have a really great tea selection. And so they have all these different kinds of teas to choose from. And that kind of adds to the experience, I think.
Yeah, we had the jasmine tea that was just, it was fantastic. And, you know, you mentioned the shumai. I think that really speaks well to them. Several people messaged me when I posted about it saying, you know, when they went, the shumai wasn't very good. You know, has it improved? And it clearly had. And that's a great sign of a restaurant that's aware of what they're doing and in some cases what they're not doing right and adjusting. And that speaks very well to not who they are, but also going forward with their other dishes.
You know, I think Bao's review was kind of interesting because he said it's the best dim sum inside the loop. And I know that the restaurant in Midtown that had been serving dim sum has closed. So I'm not honestly aware of very many places at all inside the loop that offer dim sum. So it may be best and only. but you know, I think, you know, if you want the convenience of that inner loop experience, then I think you'll be very satisfied at Silk Road. If you're willing to drive a little farther, you might find that the portions are a little larger and the prices are a little lower. And so, you know, you kind of have to decide that for yourself, right? Like, you know, we love the crispy shrimp trung fung, as you said, but it's four relatively small bites for $13. And so, like, it was delicious and I was glad we ordered it. And like you said, I was the one who pushed for us to order a second one. But the price, the value wasn't entirely lining up for me.
Well, for me, given the location, I think it did. And, you know, you made that point. You know, I actually recently been to Ocean Palace, Crown, and a few other places in the last few months and had relatively really good experiences there. Also, you go to Ocean Palace, they sit almost like 300 people at a time and they just crush it. And it's a great value and it's a great experience. And if you've never done it, boy, I invite you guys to go out to Asiatown and do that. But for me, this was like, oh, and I will continue to do that, but having something a little bit closer, a little bit accessible and of a good quality, that's worth what I think is just not a dramatically different price structure for the amount of driving and the matter of convenience. And I'm okay with that.
All right. And then the other restaurant I want to talk to you about is Doko. This is the new sushi restaurant in Autry Park from the Duckstash Hospitality team. We know them for Kokoro and Aiko and Handy's Dozo, among others. Michael, we didn't go together, but I know you've been a couple of times. I finally got over there a couple of weeks ago. So what do you think about Doko?
Well, first of all, you know, it's in Autry Park, which it is completely surrounded by these high-end luxury places. You know, Amman, Annabelle, Turner's Cut, you know, that these are places that you're not going to get out of for less than $100 a head. And Doko represents an experience that you can have where you can do that. It's a little more, it's intimate. I like the design. It's not massive, but it's well constructed. There's a certain romantic appeal to it. This is the kind of place I could go on a date, but I could also go with friends. And the execution's it's pretty damn good. I was really impressed with the sashimi, the chutoro they had. And the thing that really jumped for me, and the nigiri was all very strong, but they did a trumpet mushroom nigiri that was just, wow, outstanding. And to have something like that in that area, you know, we've talked over the past year about what's happened in the Autry Park sort of West Dallas region and this proliferation of ultra luxury places, and to have something that is of good quality but is not going to break the bank and represents a good experience for either a solo, you know, a romantic or even a friend, you know, kind of a friend kind of dining experience, I think is a great thing. And will I be back? 100% I'll go back.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's all well said. I think, you know, I like the affordability of this concept, right? I like that you can get a well-executed chicken karage or, you know, beef skewers or lobster dumpling, and it doesn't have to be some crazy spend, right? You can, that $75 per person tasting menu will give you basically all their best dishes. And that kind of, you know, that can kind of be a cap, unless you just, you know, you want to get crazy and, you know, get into the cocktail menu or buy a bottle of sake or, you know, order yourself a whole bunch of, you know, Otoro and Uni, you know, well, then you're going to pay for it. But, you know, if you're kind of judicious in your ordering, you can have a really good meal here for, you know, 50, 60 bucks. And so, you know, that's what I like about all of their places, right? That's really what I like about Ico, is that it's a relatively affordable but still quality sushi experience, but still has all the technique, right? You know, Daniel and Patrick, the two chefs who own it, right, came up in the Uchi system, and they've built a very successful hospitality group around sushi, and it's still growing. And so I think just for convenience, just for me personally, I think I'd rather go to Ico. Parking's a little simpler. You know, it's just a little easier to get in and out of there than to deal with everything that's going on at Autry Park. But other than that, you know, I think the food was a good experience, and I'd go back. You know, I'd go back if somebody else wanted to go. I probably wouldn't initiate that conversation.
When I looked around, I saw businessmen, I saw people on dates, and I saw groups, and that's very encouraging. And when you look at a restaurant group like that, that has expanded so dramatically in the past year, you know, with the humble beginnings of Kokoro and Bravery Hall, where they just crushed some really quality sushi and you know, nigiri and almost yakitori experiences in this just tiny little space. And now what they've done with the Handies, with the Ico, moving to the Woodlands, and by all metrics, you know, being very successful at it. The future is bright.
Absolutely. All right, Michael, I'm going to say that does it for our restaurants of the week. Thank you very much.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when I will be joined by Daniel Vaughn, the barbecue editor of Texas Monthly.